going to do it. Jason Tatum and company. Brown, as usual, big night. 34 and 27, respectively, for those two.
Kane is in the building.
Final call on NBC Sports Boston last night. Celtics take care of Indiana and do so handily, Rob Bradford, live from Tropicana Field in St. Petersburg. And they've won two in a row on pretty good terms. And Rob Williams is back and a lot of good vibes going on over there. One weird thing, though. Can I get to this? So you're a coach.
Is this the Fourier story?
No. Oh. I can get to that. I probably built that up too much.
Okay.
So they're Celtics are winning by 28. Tatum's still on the floor. Horford had come out. He was like the only starter to come out. And I'm sitting courtside with the great Billy Lanny, and I'm like, why are the starters still in? And then Rick Carlisle gets his B team up at the check-in gate. I think there's 4 or 5 minutes left in the game. Game was clearly over. And then he brings Jaylen Brown back to check in the game.
Yeah.
So the Pacers clearly wave the white flag. They put five backups in. Yeah. Tatum stays on the floor, and Jaylen Brown comes into the game up 28 points.
That makes no sense.
What is he doing?
I mean, I've been on both ends of a blowout, right? And so on the other end of the blowout, when you're getting blown out, you can't put in your B team until the team that's blowing you out takes off their starters, right?
Right.
Because it's a tough situation.
And by the way, the Pacers are like on the bubble for a playoff spot, I think.
Right. And so Rick Carlisle jumps that narrative and he puts in his B team. Well, right then you got to put in high school, college, it's different than the NBA. They're going to do whatever. They're never going to cry about whether or not this guy's in or that guy's in.
Are you sure? Kyrie was crying at getting booed last night in Dallas.
Put it on the list of the reasons he's cried, right? I mean,
exactly.
But the bigger issue here is, what are you doing risking Jaylen Brown in that moment? I don't get it. It's not like he needs work. It's not like putting a relief pitcher. Oh, he needs work, you know?
Right. I mean, if there was ever a night for, you name it, the Housers of the world, and get the bench in.
Wasn't until they were up 22 to make those moves.
He pulled them when they were up 22?
Up 22 with 4.5 minutes to go.
Yeah, and so what's weird in high school, and I know in public school, they have these weird power rankings where it's like margin of victory. So you see this happen way too much. It's a flawed thing. But I don't think there's a margin of victory rule in the NBA.
I don't think. Maybe there should be.
Were you turning to Billy Lanny and saying, I'm offended by this?
I was offended by that. Like, you traded for Mike Muscala. He's a total bust. I mean, is he even healthy? Put him in. Put Blake Griffin in. God.
Well, that's
give the guy some
people
minutes
to go in. I mean,
right.
You have 18 assistant coaches. Put one of those in.
Anyway, that's nitpicking because they look good. But Mazzulla still worries me. And, by the way, the trade deadline worries me. And Scal said it again this week with Jones and Mego. They should have gone after Jakob Poeltl for a backup to Rob Williams in case he gets hurt at the very minimum. They didn't. They got Muscala. He's not helping. And so this is your team. You hope Rob Williams stays healthy. I mean, the Red Sox have health issues. They're hoping a lot of guys stay healthy, but that's the biggest one. Rob Williams has got to stay healthy.
This is what got them to the finals last year. They had a good trade deadline.
Yeah.
You had Derek White. You know, so it
feels like they went a little cheap there, which is totally stunning because Wick said he was not going
to
do.
And you compare that to the Bruins, right?
Right.
The Bruins said, we're awesome, and this is our chance. We're going to go for it, which I don't know how any team, especially when it comes to how worthless NBA draft picks are, like how any team doesn't say, we have this window, we have this opportunity. Isn't the goal to win championships? This is what we talk about with baseball. This is the Dombrowski argument, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This isn't the goal to win championships? So you do what you have to do. We saw it with the Rams. The Rams gave up their entire drafts to win a Super Bowl. You know what? They won a Super Bowl. Sure, they're paying the price. Oh, well. You won a Super Bowl.
That's a great point with Dombrowski, too, because, I mean, at the time, they had traded good prospects, and I was your farm report guy.
I know.
I was like, I can't – who was it? Espinoza, and they traded a bunch of guys. The Kimbrel trade.
Espinoza for Pomerantz.
I remember arguing with Danny Picard that they shouldn't have given up whatever prospects they gave up for Kimbrel. And Picard was totally right. I mean, I'm an idiot.
Oh, like, Manuel Margot.
Yeah, Manny Margot and a couple pitchers. There was a lefty in there that they traded.
Logan Allen.
It was good. He was like an A-ball pitcher, but he was really good. But
well,
where's Logan Allen?
Out?
Exactly. Anyway, that's maybe not the biggest subject with the Celtics. But do you think Mazzulla will be a factor in the postseason?
Yeah, well,
one way or another.
So if you had mentioned everybody, all these, you know, Cora, we're not lumping in Belichick with this, right?
Right.
So you had mentioned
Montgomery, Cora, and
Montgomery, Cora, and Mazzulla.
Yep.
This is what it comes down to. It comes down to stop and start, how you do in the postseason. I mean, that's it. And Cora is defined as a manager right now by how well he's managed in the post. I mean, the cheating stuff aside, how he's defined as a major league manager is how he has done in the postseason, which, by the way.
And since you're in St. Petersburg, don't you feel like he fleeced Kevin Cash in that series in 2021, the ALDS?
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, you go back to both postseasons, 2018 and 2021. He dominated. That's what he did. He did it really well.
I mean, might have been cheating for some of them. You know, let's admit that.
I think that he is defined by how he did that well, and that is going to be continuing how he's defined. Because you want that idea. You want to, number one, get to the postseason, which in the NBA is in NHL, it's easy. But when you get there, how are you going to do? Ime Udoka last year, how do we look at Ime Udoka? I think it's very, very clear. You give him a pass for that first, up until January 1st, because he had a new guy, new systems, clearly finding a way. Then, boom, all of a sudden, he takes off. He gets the team playing really well. He gets the team playing really well all the way until the finals. Now, I will say this. He got out-coached in the finals. There's no question about it. But if as long as you can out-coach coaches along the way, that's fine. Brad Stevens, I think what still hovers over Brad Stevens as a coach is that he got absolutely out-coached, definitively out-coached.
In multiple series.
Multiple series
Spoelstra.
By Budenholzer, by Spoelstra. I mean, there is very rare times in the NBA where you say, because usually it's either you have the players or you don't. But in his case, like you didn't have an offense against Bolster's zone. What are you doing? So,
and by the way, quickly on the Bruins, Jim Montgomery won playoff series two actually from his time in Dallas. He's 1-1. He beat the Predators, lost to the Blues in Game 7.
Yeah. So my point is that
unproven.
We can talk about Mazzulla. We can talk about Montgomery, but ultimately, it's what they do, especially with the expectations that they've set. If Mazzulla gets bounced in the first or even the second round, then people are going to be saying he was not the right guy for the job. I guarantee that.
Right.
And Montgomery.
But do they like that? Because they took the interim tag off. I wonder if they don't mind that because he's an easy fall guy to come back with a new coach next year. I mean, they had no choice. Once you're in, you're half in, you might as well
take that
away from a distraction.
They're doing the business blueprint of, you know, we're gonna our program, right? We have to start a program. We have to start a way of doing things. We can't do that with an interim coach. We have to have stability. So that's what they're going by. And when you do that, you better make sure you have the right guy.
Do you think it'll be like they should have kept Will Hardy or whoever went to Utah? What were their options? I guess there was not like an obvious guy.
No, but if you say
they should have hired Dan Gundy.
Let's play that game though, Ken. If you go into the playoffs and Mazzulla gets bounced in the first round and he's an interim coach, then he gets fired. He gets fired.
Yes, first round is a disaster. And then they lose to the Hawks or something.
And then you blow everything up and you start over and you do what you did. Had to do with Ime Udoka. But they chose not to do that. Instead, they said, we want to build our foundation. Now, I've heard everyone talk about this, and this is part of the equation, the Damon Stoudemire thing.
Mm-hmm.
The Damon Stoudemire thing is, well, how important is that guy to whatever they were doing? And that, I think, remains to be seen. I don't know. It's impossible for us to tell the importance of Damon Stoudemire. All we can go by is when Damon Stoudemire leaves, like, what do they look like?
Yeah.
Like, what's that look like? So
when did he leave, by the way? What's the official?
I don't know. Oh, I know. I remember he was crying in his press conference.
Now, Jaylen Brown talked after the game. Joe, you want to set up these cuts? So this is – the concern here is that you're on a one-year window with this team because of some of the articles, the Ringer piece that came out this week about Jaylen Brown. And he is also – I saw Gary Washburn wrote a column in the Globe today. He's taking a trip to the White House Monday with Malcolm Brogdon, and they're speaking to the Department of Justice. And that seems fine. They're in D.C. anyway. Maybe that's not a big deal. The bigger deal is just – does he want to stick around here with 1 year left on the contract after this year? But here's what do we got first here from Jaylen?
So the first one here is basically he's talking about the question was like, is he okay with this kind of communication? So this was the first answer that he gave. Very first question about his comments.
I know people try to read you, guess what you're thinking, read your quotes and see what you're thinking. Is that something that you're okay with? With people not quite knowing what's going on in your mind, would you like it like that?
not necessarily. You know, I'm a type of person that like to, you know, let people know how I'm feeling about certain things and situations. And sometimes when I don't speak, people don't speak for you. And sometimes things can get taken out of context or lost in translation when those things happen. But, you know, I pick and choose my spots. You know, obviously I'm not going to, you know, overcompensate myself and just speak on everything and let everybody know how I feel about everything, because sometimes it ain't everybody's business. But at the same time, you know, just communicating, using my platform and trying to be a leader in my community is what I pride myself on. So in a sense, you know, I do enjoy using my platform and speaking on certain topics.
All right. And then it was a follow-up to that exchange?
Yeah, the follow-up was basically like, he's basically saying, you know what, this is just what we're living in. So he's embracing it, basically.
Have you felt like there were times where just like all the noise around all these things and you having to decide like there's certain things I just got to let go of because I can't address every single thing? Has that affected you along the way?
Absolutely. You know, sometimes it don't matter what you're going to say. You know, people going to take it from the perspective they want to take it from, you know, and that's the world we live in. You know, people feed off of controversy. Controversy sells. So if I have an opportunity to make something sound more, you know, appealing than it actually is, you know, usually 9 times out of 10, they're going to take it. That's the life that we live. You know, that comes with the job and territory. I'm not complaining. But just having the understanding of it, you know, not letting it affect you, you know, clarify myself when I need to. And then sometimes you just, you know, sweep stuff under the rug and keep going.
So on the court last night, Robin looked pretty good. I mean, the last two games, they've looked like they have stabilized things. He's still getting asked some questions about that. None of those answers seem very inflammatory to me. I mean, he's answering it as best, I guess, as he can or wants to. Do you think this is going to have any impact on the team? The Jaylen Brown, for lack of a better word, controversy.
Has no impact on the team, but it really is comes back to that dynamic with him and Tatum. Can they play together? Is that the best group for the Celtics going forward, those two? And you know, the thing, I don't care what Jaylen Brown says. I actually like a lot of what Jaylen Brown says. I said this, remember, when Kyrie was trying to leverage the whole playoff, the guy, kid throwing the water bottle at the Garden or whatever, he cutting in the playoffs and trying to leverage that whole situation. And Jaylen Brown said, no, dude, don't do that. You're like, you're square peg round hole. You shouldn't be bringing up this stuff just to try to get a competitive advantage when it comes to the postseason. So I like a lot of what Jaylen Brown says. What makes me a little nervous is some of his comments about, well, yeah, you know, we got to figure out like how to, you know, how I'm perceived as a star. I'm paraphrasing. I'm perceived as a star and where I fit and so forth and so on. Because ultimately, I think Jaylen, as much as Jason Tatum wants to be the guy in the NBA, or at least a top five guy in the NBA, Jaylen Brown wants the same thing, man. And I don't know if he feels like he can get that here. I mean,
I guess he does, but he doesn't really say that. I mean, we've only heard it through, like, sources in his Kanye agency or something briefly. You know, it's not like he's out there complaining daily about
I don't think at the end of the day doesn't matter as long as they play well together and you sitting courtside in the rich people seat last night.
Yeah, you know, well, I sat in many seats, so here's the Fourier story.
Oh, okay.
So Fourier had a group, big group. We had 20-25 people, whatever it was. So he didn't distribute the tickets. He wanted to control everything himself. But the problem is he had everybody in different rows and different seats. It wasn't like we had one row. I'm not complaining. They were great seats, and we appreciate the Celtics, and the American Diabetes Association crew was there, and it was awesome. Great, fun night. Great seats. But so Fourier is like a tour guide. He had to wait for everybody at the gate to get in, and then we're following through TD Garden, and then we get to the seats right as the anthem's starting, and it gets all dark, and the intros are happening, and it was total chaos. Nobody had any idea where they were sitting, so everybody just grabbed an open seat. I'm not kidding you. I moved five times. I had to get up and move and ask Fourier, where is my seat? And he was like, sit here. He like pointed at an empty seat, and it would not be the right seat. So it was a total musical chairs for three quarters. So should I complain about that or just be happy that he took me to a game?
Well, you sound like Jaylen Brown. You can't be, you know, you're not complaining, but you're complaining. You're complaining, right. But you're not complaining.
Exactly.
You know, so ultimately, I'll relate it to Jaylen Brown once again. Did you have a good time?
I had a good time.
It's all right. Results business. It's a results business.
Now, yes, it is. Now, can you, since we brought up three concerns with the Celtics, can we do a little nervous pie here? Okay. Tatum-Brown dynamic, number one. That's one slice. Yeah. Rob Williams' health, second slice. Joe Mazzulla's coaching, third slice. Which makes you more nervous? Give me a percentage breakdown of those. Think about that while Joe Braverman
trends. First of all, nervous pie is my favorite kind of pie. It's delicious.
Yeah, me too. All right, here's Joe B. with what's trending.
Like I said, I thought we played relatively good basketball on the trip. I just didn't think we were, like, elite basketball on the trip. And so that the difference between those two things are just the small details. I thought we played with effort. And so I think over the last two games, we were very, very detailed in our game plan execution, very detailed in our spacing, very detailed in our offensive attack. And, you know, I think we're just a much different team when we're committed to that. And that's hard to do over a long period of time. And, you know, I think it's just our guys have great poise about how the season goes. You know, I think they're in a good place right now.
Joe Mazzulla after the win last night. And I got to admit this, Rob. Now that sports betting has gone crazy, you know, we all had the apps out last night at the game. And Dakota and Braintree had guaranteed, he had locked in over 26.5 points for Brown. And he got 27, but like just barely. He just squeaked over. And I was afraid to pull the trigger on that before the game. Because the one thing about that, when they are going well, and last night they're going well, last two games they have been, you really don't know on any given night who is going to star for them. I mean, Horford is liable to have 10 or 15, or he's liable to have zero. Smart's liable to chuck eight threes or take none. And Brown and Tatum, obviously, the dynamic there where we watch every night. So that's when things are good, and they got a little bit of that magic back.
I love the fact that you're knee-deep in gambling now.
Well, I'm not really, because like last weekend, I think I went 1-6 on the NCAA tournament. And, lost all the free bet money that I had.
Oh,
so I'm basically now one bet a week.
Hey, can I give a plug, speaking of which?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So you know that we do the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast, which is probably the most talked about baseball podcast heading into the 2023 season.
There's no doubt.
Baseball Isn't Boring. Go check it out. And we have been partnered up with FanDuel, right? So our good friends at FanDuel.
We love FanDuel.
FanDuel. And so... It's very exciting. I just realized this, that people can get what you're talking about, which is like free bets and stuff.
It really is good. I mean, I'm not kidding you. That's
but I want people to do this. Go to FanDuel app and type in the code word boring, because, I mean, we did a podcast with Papelbon, which is like, I feel like I hit the sweet spot when it came to the baseballs and boring gambling expert, which is a person who really likes gambling and is crazy. And so we did the podcast, our first Betting Isn't Boring podcast, on Friday with Papelbon, and he went through his pick for MVP and Cy Young and all these things. But, yeah, so go to FanDuel and type in the code word boring. You'll be happy you did.
Excellent. And a brand-new podcast with Papelbon is up and available on the app.
It's so much fun, man.
Also just up is a brand-new poll at WEI on Twitter. This is a great poll by me. What concerns you the most about the Celtics as the playoffs approach? Mazzulla's coaching, Rob Williams' health, Jaylen and Jason Harmony. Jaylen and Jason Harmony. What do you think's leading the way so far, Rob?
Oh, Mazzulla coaching.
No, Rob Williams' health.
Oh, really?
Rather running away with it, 58%. Mazzulla's coaching second with 30%.
Okay.
You agree?
No.
I don't either.
I think it's Mazzulla's coaching.
I'm Mazzulla. He's like 50 at least of this pie for me.
Yeah, I mean,
although would you generally admit NBA coaches don't matter that much?
No, but that's the thing. In the regular season, they don't matter. But we mentioned before how much they matter. Brad Stevens getting out-coached in the playoffs, first with Budenholzer when he was with I'll go back, when he was with Atlanta. He pantsed him, in the words of Ken Laird, right? And so, like, Brad Stevens got out-coached then. He got out-coached, I think, by Budenholzer again when he was with Milwaukee. And he absolutely got out-coached by Spoelstra.
Yeah, and but we have seen some bad – I mean, I don't know if Doc Rivers is a bad coach, but he hasn't won since. No. I mean, and the Celtics won with Doc.
Yeah, but he won with Doc, but, you know, I don't think he's a bad – he was a bad coach in that instance. But I will say this. I look back at Doc when they made it to the finals, and definitively the moment where you say, well, that was a bad coaching decision – of running isolation for Paul Pierce against the best defender in the world and meta world peace. Like, that was stupid. Mm-hmm. So that was coaching. You know, but
Ty Lue's won a title. Frank Vogel's won a title. I mean, think about the last couple of years.
Yeah, but I mean, you can get on runs in at key times. And I'll go last year.
Rick Carlisle won a title, speaking of last
year.
Well,
night. I mean, I don't think Rick Carlisle's a bad coach.
Okay.
But Ime Udoka, we can agree. You say, if we're going to play this game of, does coaching matter in the NBA? And I say yes in the playoffs. Ime Udoka, as good as he was, I think, getting to the finals, after the first couple games, it was almost like Steve Kerr rope-a-doped him. He was like, okay, I'm going to see what you do, and then boom, I am going to totally out-coach you, which he did.
Yeah. But I would say they matter less than managers in baseball, right? Wouldn't you give Cora more importance? I mean, based on the Ron Reneke year.
In the postseason?
Yes. Bullpen management in the postseason is critical.
Yeah,
critical.
I guess. Critical. Yeah, I mean, because that's where we've seen some really bad.
I mean, how good was Cora with using his starters in the 18
but
playoffs and
Cora
World Series?
Cora was on, in 2018, Cora was on such an unbelievable heater. It was unbelievable. You know, it was crazy.
It was. In fact, we talked about that through the year. It was like you would second guess what he did in real time and it would work. It would work every time.
Put it this way, Brock Holt became the only player in Major League history to hit for a cycle in the postseason, and he doesn't start the next game, you know? and by the way, and then Ian Kinsler does something to win that game. And that, so or Mitch Moreland pitch hits, and you have to pick the right guy between Moreland and Nunez and Pierce and Moreland and Pierce and
every
and
night people would just show the GIF of Dombrowski with the red wine in the press box up in the booth. It was
the
just
red wine.
It was just him holding a glass of red wine.
I just like Backward Hat Dave.
Backward Hat Dave is great.
Back with flip flops, yeah.
God, he has missed. Do you think? I mean, what is the what's the vibe with Cora and Bloom down there right now? Is Bloom back on like solid footing? Or is like
I think this is, people ask that question, and I think it's just there's a definitive answer. Do you win or don't you? That's it. Do you win or don't you? And because this is the way that they wanted to do this. This is the construction. He said this is gonna have all the pieces are gonna fit, and you know, either you win or you don't. Because you had the money. You had the money to spend. We heard it that all the time, didn't
right.
we?
Yep.
And so you had the money, and it's not like they didn't spend it. I think for this year, they spent about $70 million on players. I'm talking about for this year only. So you spent the money.
Well, they did not get an elite pitcher. That's the one criticism for him, right? I mean, you could have been in on Rodon.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's. I think that it comes back
or
to
Evaldi.
The
– for that
it comes
matter.
Back to the whole thing was, you know, did you pay for certainty? Like, did you pay for certainty? And the one place where they sort of tried to pay for certainty was the bullpen. And we're going to see how that works out.
It's not great. It's not vibing great.
Nah, but in you know, it always seems like they're trying to be smarter than everybody else at every turn. And I know that we have that soundbite, like, I don't lose sleep over the something like Schwarber, but I lose sleep over about the diamonds in the rough, right?
I think the lasting Bloom quote from the offseason is, it's going to be awesome. Isn't that the one where he just guarantees it's going to be awesome?
What else is he going to say? Well, if you know what? Here it is. If it isn't awesome, he won't be around. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe he will. Maybe the ownership is dug in on him. But certainly, this is his chance to prove that the way that they're doing things is the right way to do things. That's it.
All right, let's go to New Hampshire and talk to Frank the Tank here on the Ken and Bradfoe Show. Hi, Frank.
Hey, Ken. Hey, Rob. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Hey, I think you said it, Ken. Who's going to star up for the night with the Celtics? So I just wanted to ask a quick question. Tatum was inconsistent last playoffs. What happens if the Celtics win it all, Jaylen Brown scores more points per game again in the finals than Tatum? I'm going to hang up. Thanks. Thanks. Right, have a good day.
Thanks, Frank. So I guess he's hinting at what? That Tatum would be upset or there'd be a changing of the mind about...
Or it could like motivate Brown being like, hey, I can be the guy somewhere else.
Yeah, oh, I see. So I remember, that would actually be a bad thing for Brown.
I remember, Ken, I remember doing a show, much like we're doing now, as I'm in Tropicana Field. You're in the Bradfoe Show studios there. Mm-hmm. But we did a show. I was in Chicago, and you were back there. And we had this discussion, I think, for the whole show. Which would you rather have, Kevin Durant or Jaylen Brown? And I made the case, I believe, I said Kevin Durant because he had 4 years left and Jaylen Brown had two. And everyone was like, oh, no, you get this, you know, you're just going to give Jaylen Brown the max contract. He'll stick around. Well, is it, do people still feel that way? You know, I mean, aren't you a little worried that this guy might jump ship?
Well, of course. I mean, that's been the whole theme of the week, right? Based on some of his comments, let alone just the dynamics of the money and him wanting to be a number one elsewhere, which maybe he's blocked here by Tatum. That's a great. I mean, it would be awesome to see Phoenix and the Celtics in the final to have that right in front of us.
So, let's reconvene on that article, that argument.
Yeah, I like Jaylen. I mean,
you'd still rather have him.
He was clutch last year. It's not like okay. In the playoffs he didn't show you he could be clutch. And I'd rather win. I would rather win or lose with him than Durant. I just feel like Durant is just selling your soul.
Okay.
But you still think they screwed up?
No. I just think we shouldn't have poo-pooed that argument about what happens after this year two.
Well, the problem is if they were talking to Durant before the season, if not at the trade deadline, it got back to Jaylen, and that seems like obvious, right? That he has heard. I mean, Wick said it himself. They had to go tell him we're not trading you. So therefore, he had to calm him down because he thought they might be trading him.
Right.
Otherwise, you don't need to have the conversation. So I don't know how that got out. That's at a minimum, that's a poor job by the Celtics to let word get out. But I guess how do you stop that? How do you prevent that news from traveling in league circles? But it seems like the Ime thing might be a factor too. Don't you agree?
I mean, I see, this is where the Missoula thing comes into play, right? You just don't know how deep the relationship is with Missoula and these other guys. And I think that's one of the reasons maybe they committed to Missoula was I think that the perception is that they gets along with the players and everything else. But Ime had rooted such a bond from this is from the outside. I don't know if you know this. I'm not in their locker room. But from the outside, it feels like you did the tough love thing and you came out on the other side of it,
yep.
Right? And to me, that this rooted that relationship where you have Tatum and Brown and loving this guy so much, where Missoula
is the total opposite. Yeah, he is just gushing love.
And to me, that like always, if you're trying to play sort of both sides of the fence, that never works out. Especially, let's not discount the age thing either. And it's unfair, but sometimes, unless you're Sean McVay, sometimes players will use crutches to say, oh, well, look, you know, hey, you're – how old's Missoula, 33?
That sounds right. Let me check.
Yeah. Oh, what do you know? You haven't been around.
34.
Yeah, what do you know? You haven't been around. What do you know? You're no Ime. You know, he's been around. He's done this. And people are going to say that if he doesn't do well. And for the players, they're always looking for crutches. Playing in every sport, they're looking for crutches. You know, that's what they do.
And the text line, you know, 413, Jaylen Brown is not clutch. He still misses free throws at the end of games. So, I mean, it's not like he has proven that beyond a
shadow of a
doubt.
He's not a good dribbler either, so.
Well, you know, but we can admit he was better than Tatum in the finals, at a minimum. God.
Yeah, well, yeah, Tatum didn't play well for whatever reason.
Didn't play well, and maybe he made, you know, should be held to blame for some of that. He didn't
adjust
either.
He was the best player on this road trip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and last night he was the star. He was the one last night.
You know, at the end of the day, we know this about the NBA. We can talk about coaching and everything else. You need two stars. You need at least two stars and to even enter the conversation. And unless you have LeBron and Anderson Varejao, you know, it's just, you know, it's
Devers and Yoshida.
Yeah, well, there you go.
That's the 1-2 punch this year, baby.
You don't. I don't know if you heard this. You don't run isolations for left fielders.
You
so,
don't. Well,
but
maybe,
if you could,
they might
you
for
could,
this one.
If you could, Yoshida would be awesome.
He's your cleanup hitter, right?
He is your cleanup hitter, absolutely.
Which I thought he was going to lead off when they signed him.
Well, they were seduced by him hitting cleanoff for Team Japan.
Well, he struck out once in the WBC. That is unbelievable. That's more impressive than 13 RBI, don't you think?
He had a great run. There's no question about it. My thing is sort of, okay, you set the bar so high. And now listen, this is great for the Red Sox. This is great for selling tickets. This is great for perception of a team that needs much better perception.
Yep.
But when you get there and all of a sudden they start pumping in high fastballs and you realize, well, he's going to have to make the adjustment all rookies do. Then everyone's like, wait a second. I thought, what happened to the guy who was sitting behind Ohtani who was going to be a star?
Well, do you think the WBC was light pitching? Like, did he build numbers up over against subpar pitchers?
No, they were okay. But, you know, are they? I think you'll see consistently better pitching in the major leagues.
And, by the way, how's his wall defense? Is this going to be Hanley part two, or is he pretty smooth?
Well, here's the thing. Like, they're hoping that the balls get hit out to him in left field. When Hanley played left field, I said this like 15 million times in the broadcast yesterday, but it's that Hanley, they stuck him out in left field in spring training and said, go learn the wall. And he had like two balls hit to him all spring.
Oh, no.
That was it. So they better.
I tell you this. I produced Mikey Adams' show that year.
No.
We talked more Hanley Ramirez. I mean, hours of Hanley Ramirez talk. Hours and hours. And it was laughably bad. It defined the season.
About playing left field?
Yes. Balls over his head and just, yeah. It was a disaster. Let's hope that's not what's happening.
No, he'll be fine. I mean, listen, we've seen plenty of bad outfielders playing left field.
He'll be fine. Okay. Now, before we let you go, because you got a call with Will at the top of the hour, and Andy Hart's going to join us at noon. We'll get the definitive clubhouse insider access from Bradfield and the Red Sox next. Yes?
Oh, listen.
Things to watch, things to...
There's a reason I follow this team up 2 hours north today. I mean, because I want to get the pulse.
Okay, you got the pulse. And I do want to ask you about Cora's vibe right now, because I think there's something to that. How is he handling this year? How is he handling the Bloom dynamic?
Okay.
So you'll tell us all about that next.
I will.
Kenneth Bradfield here today. Andy Hart joins at noon. Red Sox baseball at 1. Arcand after the game. And then Westwood One's coverage of the NCAA tournament. All the one seeds are Gonski, Bradfield. But tonight, FAU Kansas State. Kansas State is unbelievably fun to watch.
By the way, this is Marquise the first Noel. Time in seeding history that no number ones have made it.
No ones?
To the Elite Eight. Not Final Four, the Elite Eight.
And UConn is still alive. How about that? It's like a renaissance.
It is like a renaissance, exactly. Everyone's buzzing about it.
What do you like in that one? UConn-Gonzaga, 8:49 tip tonight.
UConn's going to win it all.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I see it's a big Miami vibe right now. Larranaga gets it done.
Although I heard the Nick Costos, and I forget the other guy who was on. Who was
Ken
that?
Barkley.
Ken Barkley. I think Ken Barkley brought this up, is that...
BetQL, you better you bet. Download it now on your Odyssey app.
Exactly. So I was listening to them driving up to Tropicana Field here, and they said that UConn is horrific in close games. So which makes me sad because I like Dan Hurley. Is that who it is?
Yeah, Dan Hurley, yeah. Was he at URI? Where was he? Somewhere around here, wasn't he before? No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was at URI. I think it was Buffalo, URI, and then UConn, yeah.
Nice little ascent there. All right, now... You only got 10 minutes. I know you got to relax, unwind. You and Will
have to find my rental car keys is what I got to do.
You sent out a great tweet from Tropicana Field for the rafters with today's lineup assembled on the Trop Turf. Nobody you've ever heard of or seen before except Kluber. It's Kluber and a bunch of nobodies.
Shock the world.
Your opening day started. This is the final tune-up today, right?
Right, and I am the only writer. Let's say I'm a writer, right? I am the only reporter here covering this game.
Wow. Everybody stayed to watch Whitlock.
Everyone stayed back, including, by the way, the Red Sox entire PR staff.
Cora's not there either, right?
Cora, including the manager.
Who's the manager today?
I am, this is what I vow to you on our broadcast, is that I am going to go run down when Kluber comes out of the game and be the only person that gets his reaction to pitching in today's game. The only person, the only reaction can be heard here on the broadcast after I get it.
You're going
to
leave Will in the booth alone to call play-by-play for Narciso Crooks at bats.
I will. No, any... I am ushering in a celebrity co-broadcast.
Oh. Okay. Matt Damon is there, right?
D.B. Sweeney.
Oh, close.
Close.
Well, we love D.B. Sweeney. Did a great job with your 8 men out review, your ballot.
8 men out, fire in the sky.
Is he going to be spitting chaw in the middle of the game? Just like Shoeless Joe.
Well, I mean, you know, a little trick of the trade. Those were raisins.
Raisins, yes. Exactly. Can't have that on the broadcast. All right, now tell me about Cora. Like, you've been around him. You guys get along pretty well, right, generally? I mean, he was ribbing you a little bit. He hates Drellick, obviously, since the book came out.
Yeah.
But you guys get along, right? I mean, your book was friendly to Cora.
Yeah, he held up my book.
He held your book up, took a picture. Yeah. There's been much discussion over the last couple of years about how he and Bloom get along. Does Cora like him? Do they coexist? I mean, we had Sam Kennedy say last year he's never seen a better relationship between manager and, in this case, CBO.
I would make the argument that Dave Dombrowski and Alex Cora was probably a dynamic that they got along pretty well.
Yeah, and if results are all that matters, that produced. Now, how about this one? And there's new players on the team, like... Is he being a hard nut? Is he letting Turner lead? What's going on?
So I think that Cora, like, what you have to remember with any major league manager is that they want to win. So when you say, hey, you know, you're going to have to trust us 3 years from now, all these guys are going to come up and we'll be good, that's hard to take. And a guy like Cora, especially who has won before, he wants the players who are going to win now. And whether that's at the beginning of the year or whether it's a trade deadline or whatever it is. But this isn't Baltimore. This isn't Brendan Hyde being fortunate to have a job and he riding out, believe me, in 5 years, all these guys are going to come up. This is Alex Cora, who won a World Series, who is you know, almost made it to another World Series. This is what he wants. So I think that when you talk about the relationship, I think as long as Chaim Bloom is giving him the right players, players that he can function with, the relationship's going to be fine.
So let's say they have a decent year. This is the duo. As long as they have an okay season, not a disaster, they'll stay the course with these two for a while. Like, Cora doesn't want to leave. He's content to be here for the rebuilding process, if that's what it is, and wait for these young guys to come up.
Yeah, well, I think that he has to see the potential in it, right? So I think Cora's up after next year.
Yeah.
And this is Alex Cora right now, despite all the controversy that followed him, if he has a good year this year, he's going to be perceived as one of the best managers. And he is right now, I think, perceived as one of the best managers for all the reasons that we said before.
It's certainly not Aaron Boone. God, year after year of disappointment.
But another example, right, Ken, is that a lot of these guys are defined how they – get to the postseason and how they manage the postseason.
Right.
Aaron Boone isn't perceived as a guy who has managed the postseason very well.
Conversely, is Dusty Baker, like, is he a legit great manager?
I don't know.
Or
if
did
he's
he just
a
have
great
a great
manager?
He had an unbelievable team.
I don't know if he's a great manager, but managing in baseball is up until the postseason is more about managing people than it is managing the game, almost, right?
Yep.
Because you have to – it's such a long season. You have to deal with injuries. You have to deal with personalities. You have to deal with all these different things. It's in clubhouses. Clubhouse is such a weird dynamic. So, you know, I think that Dusty Baker has a pretty good grasp. In other words, if you have a manager comes in, fire and brimstone, or perfect example, Bobby Valentine, right? Bobby Valentine wanted to change everything. Where he didn't need to change everything. He didn't need to tweak some things. So I think that a manager just has to read the room. I think Dusty Baker's probably pretty good at reading the room, and also he's probably pretty good at managing a game when it counts. Terry Francona, Hall of Famer, Ken, right?
Uh-huh, definitely.
And I think he's good at all of it. I think he's good at going through a season, understanding how he can relate to young players, how he can relate to old players. And then, by the way, when he gets to the postseason, going back to that World Series against the Cubs, holy mackerel, did he outmanage Joe Maddon, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But since then, he's just been so-so. you know.
Well, I don't think he's been so-so.
You think he's gotten more out of Cleveland?
I think he's gotten a ton out of, like, I'm so sorry. $5. the Guardians.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's got a ton out of them.
Yep.
And also, you know, this is the thing, is that that's a young team. And he's been able to relate to the young team. Because it's one of the things when Cora came in, when Farrell was there, the narrative was, you need a guy who's going to walk out of the manager's office and mingle among the clubhouse and the guys more than ever before. That's how baseball is. And it was true. I think it was true. But I think that Tito Francona can do that if he wants to. But he has the cachet where he understands, like, you know, this. I don't have to do this. He's the ultimate, like, don't give me the eyewash. Don't give me, like, just do what's important and we'll be okay.
Well, for Cora today's game wasn't important
right,
to
well,
attend.
Then, I mean, this but this is an example, right?
Yeah.
Is that there isn't, other than Kluber.
Why should he? Yeah.
Other than Kluber, he's not forcing, hey, you know what, you got to take this ride up to St. Petersburg 2 hours because you got to go play in a baseball game. No, he's like, no, you can play in a baseball game in the backfield. It's okay.
Well, looking forward to the final four games. Tomorrow back at the friendly confines of JetBlue Park. Then you're going to Northport. One final Northport trip for you, right?
Oh, one final North. Oh, it's no better way to punctuate the spring than one final Northport trip.
And then Tuesday, Joe and Will, the final against Atlanta. And actually, these games do matter because the WBC threw everything out of mix. And, like, I'm sure Cora's still trying to get his handle on what he's got with some of these guys.
Well, yesterday was the first time we saw the entire team together.
Yeah, exactly.
That was bizarre.
All right, looking forward to you, Will, and DB Sweeney, celebrity sidekick on the call, and your breakdown of Kluber's final tune-up before the opener.
It's going to be great.
Thank you for the
people,
drive.
As we said, go to the Sox Booth Twitter account. This is the opportunity to ask us questions, and I feel like this is a blank canvas in terms of this broadcast. We'll get all the action. We'll get all the play-by-play in, but we can talk about the great game of baseball, and if you want to be part of the conversation, go to the Twitter account.
And, as Braverman knows, I just checked the weather. We've got chance of, like, mixed precipitation starting at 1. So while you guys are on, I know you're indoors today. They're not opening the roof, right?
You're saying that, I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, but still, you're in Florida. Like, you've been there for a month.
Ken will be donning his baseball isn't boring sweatshirt.
I have it on. So just, think about us here in the Northeast. Paint the picture, you know. Let's live vicariously through you and Narciso Crook today in the cleanup spot.
Yeah. Listen, Ken, you get a taste of it for a few days.
Yeah,
you understand the grind.
Should
have
stayed
there.
When
you have to sit at the picnic tables at Twin Peaks, you know that you have to persevere.
All right, Rob, great job. Thank you, and we'll hear you coming up at 1 with Will.
All right, I'll see you guys.
That's Bradfo from the Trop. We continue for one more hour. Andy Hart will join us, and much to get to in the Patriots circle with him. Of course, we'll talk Celtics through this hour as well. Did you see this new poll that was released by NBA? What site is this, Joe? It's got a million followers. They have just ranked the NBA players over the last year. And by whatever their metric is, Tatum is one. Jason Tatum has been the best player in the NBA over the last 365 days. So I want to dive into this a little bit. And, of course, the Celtics question of the day. What you're concerned about most, Mazzulla, Rob Williams' health, or the Jays and their dynamic heading into the playoffs? But Andy, of course, covering the Patriots year-round, what is Belichick doing? Is a number one receiver on the horizon? Are they in on Judy? Are they in on D-Hop? We'll talk about that and maybe the coaching future of Jerod Mayo, Bill Belichick, etc. here in the noon hour on WEI.